must almost be a relief for hockey fans in Minneapolis. Norm Green is moving the Minnesota North Stars to Dallas.
Touchdown! No! No! The Cardinals have knocked the Vikings out of the playoffs! What you
wanna say? Club in fair territory and then lands fair. Wow.
So a huge break for the Yankees. Joe Mauer should be at second base.
With the sixth pick in the 2009 NBA draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Johnny Flynn from
yards left hash. Snap good. Spot down. Wolch's kick is up. And it is no good. He missed it. Are you kidding me? The season can't end like that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of a Minnesota sports podcast where we're going to go back and look at all the hope and all the hope removed through the lifetime of my co-host, Mike Colosimo, real estate agent to the stars. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. Every time I'm going to have to listen to that opener, it's just going to, you know, take a year or two off my life. But
you literally have a visceral reaction to that intro.
Yeah. And thankfully, you're a kind man. You could have gotten far worse. I mean, there's so many other drops you could have put in there that would have just torn my heart.
It's only an hour program.
I know.
That intro was a minute. The intro, the music was provided by one of my favorite bands, Face to Face. The song's called Disappointed. Maybe a little too much on the nose. I don't know. I think it fits pretty well. And all the listeners out there, I just, if you could just listen to that once, now you can feel free to forward ahead. It's about a minute. So there's the cheat code. You can get to the meat of this situation, which is, Mike, you wanted to do a podcast. You came to my business. Let me introduce myself. I'm going to keep my identity anonymous. Just because, you know, there's that saying, Mike, don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that became a saying because oftentimes people shoot the messenger.
Correct. And you're not emotionally attached. You've been in Minnesota for a little over a year, right?
Yeah, we're coming up on 2 years.
I'm
a business owner. Let's tell the people what they need to know. For the moment, we're going to call me JP McGillicuddy. That's very close to my real name, but not quite.
Sounds like a drink.
Yeah. Take two JP McGillicuddies up. All right. What's my background? I'm a sports fan, mostly. Get more interested if I have something vested, meaning wagers. The only teams I really root for or get sad when they lose would be the Dodgers. I guess I could say the Bruins, the UCLA Bruins, but we're only good at sports nobody cares about. Women's double tennis, we kill it. Water polo, basketball and football, not so much. Baseball, pretty good.
Used to be.
I'm from California. I'm a native Californian. I want to understand the culture. I do own a business out here. I came out here to start this business, and I have many conversations with patrons of my establishment. And I don't think I'm able to be truly empathetic because I. You know, you always think of Cleveland when you think about these cursed towns. Of course, you think of the Boston Babe Ruth trade. Is Minnesota cursed, Mike?
Yes.
Does it have it? And why does it have something to do with Minnesota nice?
I don't know if it does or not. I just think, you know, A, we're flyover country. Everybody knows that. At least that's what our...
If you're going to Canada, sure.
Yeah, self-perception of ourselves is, we're in the cornfields for me, being around for a little over six decades and having about 55 years of just misery, I'm not Minnesota nice. My parents are from Calabria, Italy. I was raised Italian in a state of Scandinavians. I don't have the accent. I don't eat cookies and bars and casserole. But I am a tried and true Minnesota Homer fan. You name it, I could be watching badminton, Golden Gopher badminton, and I'm rooting against UCLA. Without fail, we'll figure out a way to lose. Somebody will step on a line. Somebody will hit it out of bounds. It's just going
to
happen.
No shame in losing to the Bruins in badminton, though. We came up with this idea because it kind of just writes itself. You know, I've seen your emotional reactions. We were at the Lookout, one of my favorite local haunts in Maple Grove. And I forgot if you had mentioned that you wanted to start a podcast, but somewhere it hit me because of your emotional reaction to the Twins. They recently had a 12-game, 13-game winning streak, whatever it was. And you're like, don't worry, Buxton will get hurt. And I guess funny you mentioned that. I just heard something about that. We looked it up, and sure enough, he was on the IL. So it's to be expected.
Yeah. I mean, even when you brought it up at the Lookout and you saw my reaction, it's just, you know, scar tissue, several decades of scar tissue. And it's, you know, for us, it's not a matter of if it's going to happen. It's a matter of when and how. And our sports teams find new and creative ways to tear our hearts out. And I would just, you know, for me, would love one Super Bowl before I die. And I have no idea how long I'm going to be on this earth. Don't know if it's going to happen. What?
Well, you got the right coach, in my opinion. We'll get into all that later. Let's tell the people what the plan is. The plan is to tackle it sport by sport in chronological order as you remember it. Now, the guidelines were that you had to have an emotional reaction to this game. So,
yeah,
we apologize to all the Minneapolis Laker fans. We won't be getting into George Mikan or how LA ganked Minnesota or however that went down. I don't quite know the story, but, you know.
I wasn't born yet, but yes, I've heard stories.
We're going to take it sport by sport. We're going to start with the Vikings. And I can't think of a reason why we shouldn't get into it. Are you ready? You ready to pull your guts out on the table?
Yeah. You know what? Open a vein or two. It's kind of an annual thing. So
okay.
Let's do it.
All right. Try not to get any viscera on the mixer over here. all right. Well, first topic, first heartbreak. First time Lucy pulled the ball from Charlie Brown was Super Bowl IV. How old were you, Mike, and what was going on in your life?
Well, I was 6 years old, and it was the 1969 season. My dad, for a foreigner, was a huge Minnesota sports fan. Loved the Twins, loved the Vikings. He was kind of indifferent with the North Stars back then. But so I got into it because I just watched my dad like cursing in Italian and throwing stuff at the TV. And I'm like, why do I even want to be part of this? But I did. I got sucked in. So the first memory of heartache was Super Bowl IV, I think it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Vikings, who, you know, anybody who followed the Vikings back then, we crushed. We had the Purple People Eaters, you know, before Fran Tarkenton. We had Joe Capp, tough old Hispanic quarterback that you never wondered what the dude was thinking.
Is that because he just wasn't thinking?
Yeah, and I had
a little research on Mr. Capp.
He's a Californian, by the way. Isn't he?
Nah, he would New Mexico.
Oh, did he go to California?
He went to Cal. We'll get into him in a minute. So you're 6 years old.
Six years old.
1969 season into the 1970 Super Bowl. And there's a lot going on in the country. I don't know how, like, I just want to set the scene of what was going on in the country. We had Dick Nixon in the White House. Mm-hmm. 1968, I bring up all the time, is one of the most turbulent years in U.S. history. So much so that Lyndon B. Johnson said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to cash in my chips with this whole presidency thing. That's very rare. So we had Richard Nixon. Like I said, it was turbulent. You know, Vietnam was not popular, and it was getting less popular. And we were trying to make something Nixon called Vietnamization. We're trying to get what we did in the Middle East. We're trying to get people from the country to do the fighting, and we do, you know, advise them or whatever. So that's going on. 68 was wild. And it's kind of reflected by the culture. Do you want to take a crack at what the most popular movie was in 1969?
Wow. Boy, not great at this.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
Paul Newman was in it.
Okay. Was it Sunshine Kid?
Yes.
Butch Cassidy and the Sunshine. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It made $102 million 1970s bucks. That's a lot of money.
Wow. Yeah.
Anti-hero though, right? Like,
yes. Villain.
Number two was The Love Bug. It's a talking VW.
Oh, Herbie and The Love Bug. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Then Midnight Cowboy.
Okay.
And then Easy Rider.
Ah.
Right? Some good films
there.
Some
good classic films.
Not one of
them
are in tights or wearing a cape.
No. Quite the opposite. Yeah. No, I've seen most of them. Not the first go around, but, you know, through Netflix or whatever. I've seen most of them. Midnight Cowboy, I have not seen. Is that with Voight? John Voight?
Yeah. Okay. Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman.
Pretty dark movie.
Okay.
It's kind of wild to me that was the third most popular movie.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of anti-heroes. It's kind of a sign of the times. So, you know, anger, you might, as a six-year-old, being angry was not an uncommon emotion as an American in that year. What's going on in the music world? I know Zeppelin's kind of like your all-time favorite.
They are.
Who was the first? Was it the Beatles? Who did you, in rock music at least, what was the first band you kind of attached yourself to?
Well, you're going to laugh because I'm a Zeppelin guy, and I love classic rock. But I have an older sister who exposed me to Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
I like Frankie Valli.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have seen Frankie Valli live like three times around the country. I think some of the Four Seasons have since passed, but I've seen the movie and play Jersey Boys. But I remember listening to my sister listen to Frankie Valli. So I just kind of like, and to this day, I like Frankie Valli. And I played hockey as a kid and baseball and did some other sports. But I would like get primed up with Frankie Valli or Led Zeppelin. Quite the opposite ends of the spectrum there.
One of those two was in Sopranos. It wasn't yet.
Frankie Valli.
Yeah. It wasn't there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is pretty depressing.
Yeah.
Now I'm starting to get sad.
Understandable.
Sign up for this. The top 10 albums of that year were The Who, Tommy. The Beatles, Abbey Road. Heard of them?
I've seen The Who 8 times. Their farewell tour 8 times.
Led Zeppelin 2.
Oh, man. That's my favorite album. Yeah.
Led Zeppelin 1.
Okay.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Yeah.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stones, Let It Bleed. Very appropriate for this podcast. We'll be hearing from them later. Johnny Cash, live at San Quentin.
Johnny.
And then Chicago Transit Authority.
Oh, yes.
All right. So we're in the 1969 season, and the Vikings do well. You know, for some people who may not remember, we're not alive then. This is kind of the last days of the AFL where it was a league. You still had the Super Bowl. Everybody knows about Namath coming in, predicting and winning. That was three, right? Mm-hmm. Super Bowl three. This is the last year where you had these leagues, and I had no idea what. Looking back, here's how in the AFL you just simply had the West and the East. Okay, in the West, the Raiders went 12-1-1, first year under John Madden. The Chiefs went 11-3. Apparently, they made the playoffs. In the East, you had the Jets at 10-4. I believe in the AFL, Namath won the MVP. And then when they merged after this season, did you know that some of the NFL teams got moved over to the what would be the AFC? And that would have been the Browns, the Colts, and the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
So they I don't know how they structured it, but they needed it to be even amount of teams on each side. So they got they got pulled over to the AFC. In the NFL, do you remember what the leagues were called? There's four leagues.
I do not.
Okay. The Capital League. Wow. Cowboys took that down, 11-2-1.
Okay.
Do you have memories of the Cowboys being good? That's when they truly were America's team, I guess, or what they were becoming.
Yeah, we'll get into that in upcoming episodes, but I do remember the couple
years.
And the push off at the old Met Stadium, but that's another heartache for another podcast for another time.
Then you had the Century League. That's the Browns. They went 10-3-1.
Didn't we beat them to go to the Super Bowl?
You did.
Yeah, okay.
Then the Coastal League with the Rams, 11-3. They had Roman Gabriel.
No.
I know.
I remember Roman Gabriel, but no, I did
I
not.
Never would have known any of this. Yeah. I know my sports. I never heard of the MVP. We'll get to that in a minute. And then you had the Central. What's interesting about the Central? Do you want to guess the four teams that were in the NFC Central? NFL?
I do remember the Central because that was it was the Vikings, Lions, Packers, and Bears.
Just like it is today.
Yes.
So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So the NFL, what do you know about Roman Gabriel?
Roman Gabriel, I think he was a Rams QB, pretty well known. The Rams were pretty decent back then, but anytime they came to the old Met Stadium in December and January, Southern California team, we're 20 below. Bud Grant did not allow heaters on the sidelines.
Good.
Yeah. And so I just remember they may have been a better team, but we would always win because they played here.
Yeah. Well, somewhere there's somebody doing a podcast in Southern California. They got their Super Bowl with Stafford, though. So
they did indeed.
Not quite the same thing. And plus, nobody's really a Rams fan. Shout out, my friend Dr. Causey is. But in Southern California, you know how it is. The teams come and go.
Yeah.
I guess you can adopt them or claim that you used to be a Rams fan in the Georgia Frontier days or whatever her last name was. Anyway, they did win one. So. So Roman Gabriel, QB for the Rams, he won MVP that year in the NFL. The offensive rookie of the year is Calvin Hill. I've never heard of him.
Nope.
I've heard of this guy. Defensive rookie of the year, Mean Joe Green.
Mean Joe Green.
I once wrote a letter to Mean Joe Green. passing leader, just yardage-wise, like it's a different NFL. Sure, there was only 14 games. But Sonny Jurgensen threw for 31-02.
Redskins?
That was a nice week for Andrew Luck. Rushing leader, Gale Sayers, 1,032 yards. And then the receiving leader in the NFL was Harold Jackson. He had 1,100 yards.
Okay.
All right.
And who did Harold play for?
That's a good question. We'll get our research team on that and get back to you.
Okay. Never heard of him.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like that long ago, but squarely in the 1900s, quite a long
Indeed.
Time ago. God, time flies.
No podcast back then.
No. Probably a good thing. all right. AFL League Champions. We know who it was. The hated Chiefs. Mm-hmm. The MVP, Daryl LaMonica.
Okay.
Never heard of him.
Raiders guy. Raiders. I think he kicked and QB'd, if memory serves.
Yeah. Rushing leader, Dickie Post, 873. You know, that really puts into – well, that's the AFL. Let's see what the rushing leader, Gale, was 1,032 yards. Like, Uncle Juice, 2,000 yards in 14 games.
14 games, yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yep.
Okay, receiving leader was Warren Wells, 1,260 yards.
Oh, Warren.
So we're just setting the scene and what the landscape looked like back in the old AFL – NFL days. All right. So the 1969 campaign, as I mentioned, the Vikes took it down at 12-2, had a great season, and they were led by, you already mentioned his name, Bud Grant.
Bud Grant.
What do you remember about Bud Grant?
Bud Grant.
I got some factoids for you.
Yeah. Well, I had a neighbor who was the granddaughter of Bud Grant. So I got a little inside scoop on Bud.
Mm-hmm.
He did not drink alcohol. He thought anybody who drank alcohol was weak. He did not smoke cigarettes. He did not do anything. The guy was a world-class athlete. Little known fact, he played
basketball.
World-class
pussy.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
He just died. Come on, man. Anyway, he played for the Philadelphia Eagles, but he also played for the Lakers, if memory serves.
You got that right.
Yeah.
I have it written down. He played two seasons with the Lakers. He averaged 2 points. And before there was Bo Jackson.
Two-sport.
There was Danny Ainge.
Okay.
But before there was Danny Ainge, there was Bud Grant.
Bud Grant. Yeah. So
he spent 18 years with the Vikes. Yeah. Pretty successful. Couldn't get you over the cross line.
Nope.
Or the finish line.
Nope.
That's tough. Yeah. So, overall impression of Bud Grant, do we blame him? Does he need security to walk around Minnesota? Oh, he died, so I guess.
Recently passed. No, Bud was a legend here. And I never blamed any of the losses on Bud. He was pretty hard-nosed, pretty, he did not allow – I don't think he'd be able to coach in today's modern-day NFL because his players were not allowed to spike the ball. Mm. They were not allowed to celebrate in any way if they scored a touchdown, got an interception, whatever. His theory was you need to act like you've been there before. Hard-nosed, new football inside and out. I can't personally blame the losses on Bud. I remember each of the four Super Bowl losses, and I remember just stupid things happening, self-inflicted wounds, interceptions, fumbles, kickoff returns, and Bud's not out there playing. Yeah, so,
that's true.
Yeah.
Is that part of the curse, all these random things that happen?
I think it is. I think it is just these self-inflicted wounds, things you can't make up, and I could come up with 20 of them right now that – from recall of things like, wow, no, that just happened. I don't blame Bud.
I wonder if it's in the modern day Viking psyche, meaning like we have all this history and they kind of steer into it like a self-fulfilling prophecy sort of thing. Are they expecting it? Hopefully they're not historians. I don't want J.J. McCarthy to know about the Super Bowl IV or the Blair Walsh or –
Yeah, 98 Vikings, 2009 Brett Favre, throw against your body, could have ran for a first down and won the game. But I'm over that. No, I don't think so. I think the modern-day athlete is so different than they can compartmentalize. It's all about dollars now, endorsements. But, you know, who knows? I think we got a great coach right now with Kevin O'Connell.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So I don't think so. But just last January, the Rams kicked the crap out of us. And, you know, 14-3 team. And I think the Rams were 10-7, 11-6. And it threw us around like rag dolls. 9 sacks.
Sammy Darnold from my hometown.
Yeah.
Sam Clemente. Sam, I think you got the most out of him. I had guys in here at my business telling me, like, one guy in particular seemed pretty sharp with sports, and he's like, I have no faith, and sure enough, you know.
Well,
it'll be interesting to see what he does in Seattle. If that line's no good, he's in trouble, mark my words. I think it's a positive that you squeezed the most. I mean, you guys get good quarterbacking out of Josh, decent quarterbacking.
Dobbs.
You know? Dobbs. And the backup for the 49ers that broke all Brett Favre's records.
Oh, Mullen.
Mullins. You got the right coach. Hopefully JJ can play a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Good defensive coordinator. We're not here to talk about modern day football, but yeah, it is interesting whether these guys know the history and, you know, play with like sort of that gorilla on their back. I mean, sports seems pressurized enough. You don't need like, what would be the right word? Like,
add additional.
I don't want to say like salvage or like break any curse. You know, that's a real burden. All right, back to 1969. The QB, Capper. Anybody Joe call Cap. Him that? I just made that up.
No, not to my knowledge. But Joe Cap again. I don't think he'd be a QB in modern-day NFL.
I'll tell you one thing that would happen to Joe. Here's what Joe Cap would sound like after being tackled in the NFL today.
Oh, 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 oh.
That's because he runs like Derrick Henry, but he's not 250 pounds of muscle.
No,
he ran so upright. He was known as, you know, let's get into Joe Cap. He was at the helm in the 69 season. He had, I didn't write down all of his stats, but they weren't great.
No.
He was like a scrappy throwback. He is the guy we're referring to when we say, hey, Ryan Fitzpatrick, that's the one guy I thought of, is a throwback. You know Fitz,
oh, yeah.
Lower his
Fitz
shoulder.
It's
from the reading I did, Joe Cap would do the same thing. Lower his shoulder, you know, take out a linebacker, big clubhouse guy, all the guys loved him, do anything to win, you know, has to make up with intangibles for his
lack of athletic ability,
his tangible measurables and his arm and this and that. So seems like a guy I would get into. Who in today's modern day, in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, would you compare to Cap?
Well, from a personal standpoint, because I met Joe Cap at a hotel that I was running in downtown Minneapolis about 20 years ago. They had a Vikings reunion at this.
Did you give him a piece of your mind?
Well, no, I did not, because he was passed out in the lobby. He was hammered. And so I had to go out there and get him up and help. Oh, and his old teammates helped him get back to his room. But so that made me think of Brett Favre. You know, back in the day, Brett Favre was far more athletic, had a, you know, break your fingers with his, you know.
But that mentality, that, I get where you're going.
Good old boy.
I never miss a game.
Exactly.
We want to
have a beer
there
with this guy. Yeah. So that's who I would think of, minus Joe's, lack of athletic ability. Joe just led by just sheer grit and determination. And I think that is a form of leadership in sports, right? You know, your teammates are like, I want to rally around this dude. He's given his body up. And if memory serves, he got knocked out of Super Bowl IV at some point, and our nondescript backup came in and threw another interception. But I'm over that. That's who I'd think of, Brett Favre.
Okay. He says he was a running quarterback, but I looked it up during that season. He only had 22 rushing attempts for a total of 104. That's a good average. Maybe the data is wrong there, but, you know, kind of known as a scrappy guy. Other leaders on the team, rushing yards, it was Dave Osborne, 643 yards.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
Well, because, you know, back then, the NFL's changed so much. I'm going off of memory. We had Dave Osborne and Bill Boom Boom Brown. Two slow white dudes, but they were our they
it's
were
a sign our, of the times.
Yeah,
Mike.
One and two running back, and then we eventually got Ed Marinaro. But that's down the road.
He's a Paisan like you.
He is a Paisan, and he ended up having an illustrious acting career on Hill Street Blues. And Dave Osborne, I think he coughed it up once in that game. But and Bill Brown, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember who Cap's favorite target was? Because he definitely had a favorite target.
We had Gene Washington.
That's the one.
Gene Washington, who I loved. Vikes have always had phenomenal receivers. We just haven't had great quarterbacks other than Fran.
We've got some of the best receivers of all time.
Of all time. And we've got one right now.
Two in the top 10.
Yeah.
Already with JJ.
Yep.
And of course Moss.
Moss.
And then Carter.
And Carter.
I don't know where he falls in the top 10, maybe top 20.
I would say, and all he did was catch touchdowns. The guy had, like, Velcro hands.
And he looked like Godzilla's kid. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do not.
I forgot his name. If you look that up, this is not my take. This is Adam Carolla's take. But if you look up Godzilla's son,
okay,
and you put it side by side with Chris Carter – you'll be blown away.
Wow. I'll have to Google that.
All right. So yeah, him and Gene had quite a chemistry going on. Remember I said Cap threw for 1700 yards. Washington had 821. That's 48% of the yards that Cap threw.
Right.
Went, if he quarterbacked all the games, I didn't check that.
Yeah.
But, just to compare it to who's a duo where you kind of know where the ball's going. I I just looked up Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams.
Sure.
In 21, when Rodgers won MVP, he threw for 4,100 yards.
Wow.
And 38% of that went to, so 10% more to Devontae. So, yeah, one of the, like, if you're playing fantasy, you know who you're drafting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And for that, you know, style of football back then was a lot of running to set up the eventual pass or occasional pass. Now it's completely turned around, right? It's pass to set up the run. So 1,700 yards for Joe Capp is amazing, because if you've seen him throw a ball, it looks like a dying quail. His I can throw a better spiral, and I did not play football.
Sorry. Oh, good for you.
Sorry, Joe.
Christian Bale isn't impressed. Yeah, that's tough. That is very tough. They made it to the Super Bowl, though. He did something. Maybe
did.
Because of these guys. Maybe because of this. Let's move over to the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm going to. I wish I knew a safety's name. Of course, I'm going to. I was going to.
I could tell you
pick
safety.
A random cornerback.
Paul Krause.
Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Krause. No, I'm talking about a name that these guys didn't love. A name that came from a song, the Purple People Eaters. Can you name the four main ones?
I can. Okay. Jim Marshall, who just passed a couple weeks ago.
R.I.P. Jim.
Yes. Carl Eller. I've met both of those guys. Alan Page, who is now a retired Justice of the Peace judge.
And quite a successful man.
Absolutely. Very intelligent football afterlife.
What are the chances we get him on the pod?
Slim.
Okay.
And then I think it was Larson, if memory serves. He was the fourth.
You're four for four.
All right.
Yeah.
I can't remember his first name. Is it Gary Larson?
It is.
Okay.
I thought Gary Larson wrote the Far Side cartoon.
He may.
Someone can look that up. Alan Page, let's talk about him for a minute. Now, something interesting about him is he won MVP 1971.
I believe it.
He had 109 tackles. This is the 71 season. 10 sacks. This is 14 games, ladies and gents. He had three safeties.
Yeah, he was a beast. I mean, they all were, but yeah. He was the leader, in my opinion, although people might say Jim Marshall, because he was the original Iron Man before Favre broke the consecutive game record. But, yeah, my goodness, it was they were fun to watch. They were so fun to watch.
Yeah. On top of that, he had 35 assisted tackles. He recovered three fumbles and blocked two kicks. Quite the year for Mr. Page.
Yes.
You know what, though? Even more respectable, because that's coming off the letdown of the Super Bowl loss in 70.
Yeah.
So you got the Purple those. People Eaters. Their motto was, let's meet at the QB.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was, there's always next year. Wow. Did I go there?
Yeah. You're definitely over all this. Pot shots coming from every angle.
Yeah, the battle cry of a Vikings fan. There's always next year.
I got my notes out of order. Just one little anecdote about Cap. This is from Sports Illustrated covering the Super Bowl. This is one of the Jerry Mays, one of the Chiefs guys, said Cap's a tough being.
Ooh.
Once I got,
he didn't say beaner, did he? Bean?
No.
Okay.
Being,
because he called himself a beaner. That's the only reason I would ever use a reference like that.
He's only allowed to say that.
I'm a Dago, so I can.
Yeah, I'm a cracker.
All right.
Tough being, once I got in on him and he hit me on the helmet with his follow through. Common thing we see still today.
Yeah. Who said this?
This is Jerry Mays.
Okay.
Mays lifted up his helmet, which was cracked over the ear hole.
Wow.
And he said, Cap didn't even gesture. Didn't acknowledge that had happened. He broke the guy's helmet.
Yeah.
The helmets were made out of styrofoam back then.
Well, and there is, if you YouTube this, you will see Joe Capp had an arch enemy, and they were doing some type of award, and he's up on stage with this arch enemy. I can't remember who it is. It was on ESPN like 25 years ago, and he punched the dude in the face and knocked him out. So Joe Capp was a tough old dude.
Again, ladies and gents, when we're talking in this day and age about throwbacks, We're talking about cap.
Yes.
All right. Okay, so excellent campaign. Were you glued to every Sunday? Were you glued to the TV? Did you follow him like that? Tell me about what your experience is.
Yeah.
Was there rituals? Was there food? Did you make brat? Did you make a nice gravy, a Sunday gravy?
Okay. We don't use the term gravy, but
I've watched a lot of Sopranos.
Yeah, yeah. That's Sicilians, I think, use that. We call it sauce, and we did. Every Sunday was a pasta dinner, and then my dad and I, mom wasn't into the Super Bowl. My two older sister, or into the Vikings, I should say. My older sisters would kind of come in and out. It was just my pops and I religiously every Sunday. And my parents had very thick Italian accents. And all of a sudden I could tell, because you're a Vikings fan, if my dad got fired up, I would get fired up because my old man's fired up. So, you know, we went 12-2, I think.
You did?
A lot of them were.
We went 12-2.
Yeah.
What was your role again?
Well, see, that's, again, a Minnesota fan. Like, I am very superstitious, and I think I've shared this with you, JP. I almost said your actual name. Yeah. And I would sit, like, if the Vikes were down at halftime, I'd go change my shirt. And because I had some type of effect on the outcome of the game.
Of course you did.
Or I'd move the, into a different chair. Or I had a couple different Vikings jerseys as a kid. T-shirts. They were not actual jerseys because my mom would never spend the money on that. And I would go change out of my Carl Eller into my Paul Krause, number 22.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, you were like Fletch.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. So... if they lost, it had something to do with me. If they won, of course, I had something to do with
them. Did you not wash them in the whole bit?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And you're a baseball guy.
Sure.
I played baseball. If I were on some type of streak, baseball-wise, hitting streak or whatever, I wouldn't wash my socks.
Yeah. You know, they say superstition's unlucky. It's a little poker
thing. I know that.
Little paradox.
Oh, so well, yeah. When it comes to poker.
Okay, where were we? Okay, yes, we have the Purple People Eaters. They hated the name. They wanted to be called the Purple Gang, or that's how they referred to each other, or that group of defensive linemen.
Okay.
Okay.
Did not know that.
All right, so the big game. Like you said, do you have any memory of the playoffs? They beat the Rams. Sorry, Roman. Romulus, they took him down.
It was here, if memory serves. And it, you know, again, Minnesota in December, January can get a little dicey, and you know, Bud Grant and his ways. We were used to it. Most teams from Miami or California, I think mentally they were out of it before.
Why would
the game.
You not use that as an edge if you have the ability?
Exactly. You know, and
fucking pussies from California.
Well,
remember when it used to get cold in Minnesota?
Yeah, I do. Vaguely, global
used
warming.
To snow.
Global warming, right?
Yeah,
Al Gore was on to something.
Lied to.
Yeah.
No,
that's. We could do a podcast
the folks,
on that.
The, yeah. That would be actually as depressing as this is for you. That might be more
for you. Absolutely. We're being cryptic now. So another podcast for another time. Right?
Yes. All right. So yeah, they roll through the Rams. They roll through the Browns, which I always think of as the most cursed, you know, before it was Boston, but they had the Celtics, you know, like,
yeah,
Cleveland's close. I mean, the difference between Minnesota and Cleveland, frankly, is Minnesota has one more of the big four sports. They have one more championship with the 87-91 Twins.
Yeah.
Great
years.
I could be wrong, but I think Cleveland just has the one. LeBron year.
And, yeah, recently.
And they're fucking terrible every year. You know,
yeah.
That's the difference. That's a good question. Would you rather be, I mean, the Browns have been terrible. And they, you know.
Yeah.
Would you rather have it be like that, not have Lucy hold the ball for you and move it at the last minute? Or would you rather just have no hope and fucking take up, I don't know, fucking
well
guitar?
Yeah.
Or some other hobby.
Well, I am doing that with you, actually. But, I've been asked this question. I'm sure a lot of sports fans have been asked. Would you rather get your ass kicked 41 donut like the Vikes did in 2000 against the Giants to go to the Super Bowl? Or would you rather lose in a overtime one-point game? I don't know. I'd rather win both of those scenarios. So I don't know what's worse. I honestly don't. I mean, it's the lesser of two evils, I guess.
From my perspective, you want to be in the game.
Yeah.
That's why we
somewhat
do this.
Relevant.
I
right.
mean, sports, when you boil it down, it's a distraction.
From real right? life. It is indeed.
And so, no offense to all, this is where I don't want my identity
yeah.
to be known. Yeah, those aren't real problems, you know. And
they're not.
And so that during that 3 hours, if you're in the game the whole time, I mean, you're going to remember that. If it's 41-0, just turn it off. Kind of, we're watching the U.S. Open as we're recording this, and it reminds me of, like, I like to bet on golf. And so if I have money on, let's say, Rory, and he misses the cut, I mean, it's just not as entertaining as if he,
yeah,
like he has recently, misses a few putts and you lose money. It's just – If the end game is being distracted, you want to be close. Just being out of it's no fun. Cleveland, I mean, their distraction has become their misery, right?
Right.
Their whole bit is that.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to go back several decades when the Indians, which are now the Guardians, yeah, were relevant and won some World Series back in the 50s, 40s, whatever.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
A long time. Yeah. So, no, I guess from that standpoint, I'd rather be a I can't. Unfortunately, I've had so many scars. I can't see it any other way. It's like being abused, but you keep going back for more. That's me. That's most Minnesota fans. That's if we have some eventual guests on our podcast, they're going to share the same misery, the same cup of misery that I am going to share with you.
You all drink out of the same well.
We
and
do.
And it's poisoned.
We indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I want to see you get that championship before you cash in your chips.
Well, I shared this story with you before we went and decided to do this, but I have a very good close relative friend. And I asked him once to be my pallbearer when I die so the Vikings could let me down one more time.
Hey, no.
And he didn't find one. Humor in that because he played for the Vikings. And yes. Thank
De Niro
you
thought
that.
It was funny.
Yeah. Thank you, Robert.
As did I.
Yes. So, unfortunately, Matt did not. I'll leave his last name out of it for now because
hopefully he's on the pod.
I'm hoping so. I actually owe him a phone call. But it is what we've grown accustomed to. I know we're going to talk 1970 Super Bowl, but most recently, within the last 3 weeks, we got knocked out of the NBA finals once again, and it wasn't even close. We got a gentleman's sweep. And I'm not a huge basketball guy, but I'm a homer. So I was glued to the TV to watch every moment of misery.
Well, there you go. You didn't lose in heartbreaking fashion. Did you like that more or less?
I liked it less.
Yeah, see? I think
yeah,
I,
that's
I think,
a great,
I think you want to be in it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, let's get back to the game. So basically they just shut out Minnesota. And I have a little quote here about the game. Actually, this is about the offense. It says apparently the NFL's gotten a lot more complex. They were just starting to mess around with different plays, changing the set at the line. It says, let's see if I got a quote here. Jack Patera, you reckon, P-A-T-E-R, he's the defensive coordinator, said after the game, we were aware of all their sets. All we could do was try to help the defense recognize them and hope for the best. Hope is not a strategy.
Yeah.
I don't know how much Kansas City hurt us and how much we hurt ourselves. I know we didn't play our game. We were more cautious. Is that grill on the back? I don't know. but that can come from their offense, being more cautious. The defense sets and adjust mentally, then reset, and you have to figure out what set they're in. I think he's referring to the offense. We got in the Super Bowl playing aggressive defense, but we couldn't or wouldn't be aggressive in this game. So Stram gets a lot of, this dovetails nice into my next point. Stram gets a lot of credit for being sort of, I mean, we'll just stay in Kansas City, like Andy Reid, you know, doing inventive things.
Yeah.
Speaking of inventions, that's the first year, just to memorialize it, immortalize it for you, Mike.
Yeah.
All of this can be caught, all of his glee can be caught. That was the first year they did the live mic on the, so Stram's mic'd up.
He was
remember about
one.
That. Did they play it during the broadcast?
I remember hearing it after. I
did
know
your dad throw shit while he was listening.
He did.
To it. Really?
He did. And I, you know, going back, I just remember seeing, you know, these words he was making up, and it's like taking candy from a baby, and I wanted to punch him in the face. You know, Len Dawson, I remember when he used to host NFL Inside the NFL program, which has been on for decades. I wouldn't watch it because I hated Len Dawson. He was the QB of the Chiefs. And then we had a famous golden gopher named Bobby Bell that played for the Chiefs.
Right.
And I suddenly disliked Bobby Bell. So I don't.
No one can question your allegiance, Mike.
No.
You got vendettas left, right, and center.
You're right. To a fault. To a fault. What I do remember is they flashed to Stram a lot. And so I'm sure I just don't recall it being him saying anything during the telecast. I do remember, if you remember who John Madden's first partner was when he was doing the broadcasting?
It wasn't Pat Summerall?
It was Pat Summerall. He was on the telecast, and he is such a distinct voice, right? Very
Pat.
Young.
Pat.
Pat Summerall. Yeah. Yes, sorry. Pat Summerall. I don't remember who his sidekick was at that point. But yeah, I just remember at halftime trying to calm my dad down because we were down, I think, 16 rip. And it was just self-inflicted wound after self-inflicted wound. And I remember, you know, kind of the innovation. Back then, it was always like I formation, you know, run to the left, run to the right, sweep this, sweep that. They had like a triple I formation. I'm like, what the hell is this? I, you know, 6-year-old kid, so I'm not like a great football mind at that, not that I am now. But they had some really innovative things that were, I would watch and go, wow, that is really unique. And our vaunted purple people eater defense, it's like if they needed 4 yards, they'd get 5. If they needed 2, they'd get 3 without fail.
Yeah, it sounds like they weren't comfortable. They were throwing some looks at them where they couldn't do their thing. And it's a
yeah,
and
sorry.
you can't. It's been immortalized on NFL films. Let's talk about Hank Stram for a minute. I just want to point out one thing.
Boy.
Yeah, we were talking a little. You hate this man, so you like this part.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't unhappy. No, I was going to say I wasn't unhappy when he died. But no, I would not wish that on anybody.
The aforementioned Sopranos is so good at writing something called malaprop or malapropism. That's when I have the definition right here. We talked a little bit about it the other day.
Yeah.
The mistaken use of a word in place of a similar sounding one.
Yeah.
The example they give is flamingo dancing versus flamingo dancing.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Malaprops. We've all heard, all the NFL fans have heard, matriculate down the field. So this guy was, sure, I don't think football fans care too much, but I was really disappointed in his grammar. He used a malaprop by saying, here's the definition of matriculate, to be enrolled at a college or university or record an official register. That's nothing to do with football or negotiating your way down the field. So,
right.
So at least we have that. He looks like an idiot.
Good. Well, he should. But
okay. Although he schooled the Vikes. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that's not.
Yeah. No, and I didn't know at 6 years old what that meant, what that word meant. But I took it as an offensive remark. And then when he said, it's like taking candy from a baby several times. About our defense and how they could just run. Again, they needed 2 yards, they get 3. They needed 3 yards, they get. And it's like taking candy from a baby. And I just wanted to spit at the TV.
Do you remember, speaking of like sort of an emotional reaction, like, you know, teams, certain towns will light cars on fire and start. Did you light your big wheel on fire? What did you do to
I
sort
did
of
not.
React to the. To, I cried. Self-medicate, just, you know.
I cried.
Called it a night.
I cried. You know, my dad was angry. But, you know, the one thing I realized, like, once the game was over, he'd calm down and he'd just move on about his life. He was older.
As you should.
And I do now. That's where I was going with this. When they lost, you know, bringing up that 41 donut loss to the Giants 25 years ago, 2000, my son, Michael, who was 33, soon to be 34, I made him go clean his room after. The room was fine, but I was pissed. I'm like, go clean your room, Michael. My room's fine, Dad. Go clean your room.
Oh. And,
so now
the kids caught shrapnel.
Oh yeah, if we ever have my son on this, he'll tell you. And now he's that way. He's 33, soon to be 34. He is a diehard.
I was texting with him and I told him about the pod and I said, if you have any games that you're, and he had, you just right away, well, first of all, the Saints, you're, he had a list, you know, he was ready to go. So I think he'd be on the pod if he has, you know, the apple doesn't fall. It's generations of this stuff. It's
it
kind
is.
Of endearing in a way. I'd like to be out here not too much longer, but long enough to see. I'd love to see the Vikes win one and watch all
gosh.
You guys cry
just
like
one.
Little babies.
Yeah, I mean, I could die a happy man.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it. There's one other note on here. Their kicker, insult to injury, the Chiefs set a record for longest field goal. I was going to ask you if you wanted to I think this wouldn't be a chip shot today, but it's close. Well, how long was the longest field goal of all time in 1970?
Oh, my gosh. I know they went straight at it, right? They didn't have that, like, angle kick soccer style. Jan Stenerud, I think he had three or four field goals that game. And the very first one was the record, if memory serves. I'm going to say it was like a 59-yarder.
48 yards.
48. That was the record?
That's
oh,
the
my
record.
Gosh.
Yeah. According to my research. Okay. Last question, Mike, and then we're going to talk a little bit about rock and roll. There's a segment on here just to appease me.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of guitar music.
As am I. But you play it and I don't. I'm just a wannabe.
That could change soon. It's all about dedication. Okay. All right. So scale of 1 to 10, how painful is this one? I want to get a sense of the rankings.
10. Oh, sorry. Oh,
that's the answer. That's the answer. Are they all going to be 10?
Oh, are you asking about that? I thought you were going to rattle off some questions. So that particular, I think because I was so new, so young, I'm going to give it like a 7. Now, and it's so far away. What was that? 54 years ago, 53 years ago. I'm going to say probably a 7.
Okay.
At the time, it was a 10, level 10.
But it sits at a 7 in
it sits at a 7. That is kind of setting up our future podcast. Was the first time I went to bed crying over a Minnesota sports team.
Yeah,
and there were dozens after that, even as an adult.
Okay. All right. Well, that was Super Bowl 4. Thank you for, you know, reliving that with me.
Mm-hmm.
The part that I found striking about this research was the top 10 list of the musical acts. It's just so sad. But we have TikTok now, Mike, so it's okay.
Yeah.
Every week I'm going to pick a song from that year, a band, a song, and talk a little bit about it. I enjoy rock history and things like that. I really enjoy Keith Richards. I think he's smarter than he sounds, certainly. And he's a bit of a hero because he's always just done it for the love of music and stayed true to who he is.
Yep.
And I read his book and you don't hear any like sexual allegations or anything. He's just a good guy who liked junk. You know what I mean? He liked to get fucked up as rock stars did back then.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if you're aware of this drug bust that happened in 1967. It was at Keith's house and somebody tipped off reporters who then tipped off police and they did a bit of a raid. Do you remember Marianne Faithfull, the actress who was dating who was dating Mick at that time.
I remember the name, but I couldn't tell you anything. She's been
type lady.
Yep.
When they did the bust, she had nothing but a fur coat on. And that came up in court. And Keith and Mick were facing real time here. And I'll just read this. This was Keith's response in the courtroom. The guy just has a moral code and he sticks to it and he doesn't really give a fuck. And that's why I love him.
Mm-hmm.
When asked by Queen's counsel, Malcolm Morris, if he would expect a young woman to be embarrassed if she had nothing but a rug. It was a rug, a fur rug, not a coat.
Okay.
But that's it.
Makes it
in
better.
The presence of several men, Richards replied, "We are not old men. We're not worried about your petty morals."
Wow.
Said that to the prim and proper judges. He got a year. He only did a day. A lot of people don't know. Keith Richards sings the occasional tune. All the Mick ones are famous.
Yeah.
This tune is called "You Got the Silver." And it's sung by Keith Richards, and I want you guys to enjoy it. Go listen to a guitar-driven record today. And remember that, how things used to be. All right, Mike. Good times?
We out of here.
We're all done.
Fantastic. All right, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Episode 2. The Fran Tarkington years.
Sir Francis.
I'll see you next week, Mike. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
You got my heart, you got my soul, you got the silver, you got the gold, you got the diamonds from the mine. Well, that's alright. It'll buy some time.